commonly used to subjugate women, I think we, in our internalized misogyny and in the internalization of this purity culture, even though it is harmful for us, I think we've also used it in a way where it absolves us of our own responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And how we demonstrate a lack of emotional maturity in connection and relationship with people that we're sleeping with. When in reality, what it's like, what it likely demonstrates is that you don't have good boundaries.
Hola, everybody. This is Lucilania.
Hey, what's up? This is Steph coming at you live.
And this is Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy podcast.
Welcome back to part two of this episode. We left off last week talking about soul ties. And so we're going to get a little bit deeper into talking about soul ties. Are they real? How is it based on the Bible? We'll see. Let's talk about it. All right, let's jump back in. And next thing you know, because a lack of emotional intelligence likely means that you also have a lack of boundaries. And now we locked in on some dude who really either can't or really doesn't want to really truly be there in the way that we want him to be there. He's just there enough to get what he wants. And then we are so enmeshed emotionally that this is when you start to hear about soul ties.
Oh, gosh.
And throughout the years, it was always like the concept of soul ties really threw me because, again, like purity culture in general, which was where soul ties was mostly brought into the conversation, was when it came to purity. It was largely directed at girls and women, mm-hmm. and how we, you know, we had soul ties. And generally, it was the accusation was like, oh, you slept with them when you shouldn't have because this isn't your mm-hmm. spouse, mm-hmm. and now you have soul ties.
It sounds like a some kind of disease or something that you could catch.
Right, because I'm like, okay, well, if soul ties are real, then why is it that y'all only directing this at girls? And we're talking about girls who are sleeping with boys. Why isn't it that the boys don't have soul ties, but it was like it was very misogynistic because it was always, oh, it's because you guys are the emotional ones and y'all have sex with boys and get all tied emotionally to them and boys don't. Boys are able to have sex and it not be a thing, which of course for me is like, okay, so then that means soul ties ain't really real.
It's not. The best version for us is soulmates, and even that's still like,
and that's right. Well, I mean, and then the next question I have after that is, okay, I'm like, so what about girls who are raped? You mean to tell me that now not only are they going to have to deal with the trauma of the rape itself, mm-hmm. but now you're also judging and shaming them and saying that, oh, because they had sex, even though it wasn't their choice, that now they're tied spiritually to this man and it wasn't their choice? That doesn't seem fair.
I've learned that I've become much more of a liberal thinker in the ways that I think about things, with still leaving room for the unknown, right? Because we can't explain everything. And it just, first of all, the idea that like two souls, okay, this thing that is unique to us individuals is somehow able to permeate the boundary of each other's soul and somehow get tied like a tie knot because of an experience that you had and that you can't get, like, it's very dangerous. Okay. First of all, I don't know. I rarely have ever heard a guy ever talk about soul ties. Like, oh my gosh, like we have such a connection. You know, we have this soul. Like, I don't even know how we even use it in a conversation because it's just something I would never talk about. And again,
at all.
So it goes back to, again, what's its purpose? Who's using it? How is it being used? Because the people using it are probably using it in a way of being able to empower themselves and disempower those below them in order to believe something that's not true, to fabricate or to continue this narrative that that's never been. It's bad enough we need people just to come up to the altar, or come to church to believe in a God that they've never seen before and a man that they've never seen before, heal a bunch of people, change wine, all this mystical stuff, right? Because for many people, it's mystical. And then you're telling me now that for every partner I had, our souls
are inextricably connected to them. So therefore, you know, are you going to get a husband who wants you because you have all these soul ties with all these men that you slept with and you can't, and supposedly you can't do nothing about. That's the part. That's also the big thing. And I was like, okay, so if they are real, you also want me to believe that there's nothing that I can do, that my spirit is now forever tied to them.
Forever.
There's and so, and then, you know, again, I am not a theologian by any means, nor do I desire to be, but because this is something that we learned in church and I had to, you know, refresh my memory, because I'm like, I went looking again, just to be safe, because I would hear this thing. And, you know, because we are the generation that, you know, learned about the internet first. It's like, oh, wait, soul ties isn't even a term that's in the Bible. Like that phrase, those two words together is not in the Bible. Now, there are scriptures, and I'm gonna read one from the Old Testament, one from the New Testament, that I remember hearing being used to further this argument. The first one from the Old Testament was from 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 1, and I'm reading in the King James Version. And it says, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul."
That's so poetic.
Two friends, their souls are knit together, and they loved each other as if they were themselves. But you know, that is used now. This, before I even go on, because of course, like the concept of soul ties is very much connected to sex, and we just spent two episodes talking about sacred sexuality. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that they would use that. But then most of them, if not all of them, would scoff at the idea that David and Jonathan were more than friends.
I was gonna say that, because like, are we still reading the same thing? I was getting the feeling here, no matter how poetic it was, like, lover,
or are they just friends? Because if you're using this scripture to talk about soul ties and the danger of soul ties, but one, reading that scripture, what was wrong about that? About the fact that they said that their souls were knit together, and he loved him as his own soul, whether they're friends or lovers. What is wrong with love and being that and being connected to someone in that way?
Well, it's there's nothing wrong, but you know what's funny? We call it bromances. Okay, when men exude, you know, I love my man, you know, this guy, and he's like, and we call it this bromance, because we can't find a way to be able to, as a single identity of a term, to really just say that two guys have a relationship that is so deep and connected that it feels, the closest we can say is it borders on romance, so it has to be a bromance. Like,
so this is a conversation I have frequently, and it's something that can trigger a lot of guys, because they, and it's really, there's a lot of layers to it. I think misogyny and patriarchy play a big role in this, because we realize there are a lot of men who are heterosexual and that they want to have sex with women, are sexually attracted to women, but are homo-romantic. Because of the fact that our society teaches us to value men more than women. And so you get in relationships with men who then end up like prioritizing their male friendships over their sexual / what's supposed to be romantic relationship with their woman. And it's like, and not to say that men can't and shouldn't have deep profound friendships with their men,
yeah, that's
but it's the idea of how they treat women terribly, but yet still want to have sex with us and will agree to a relationship in order to have sex, but really don't even act like they like us or women in general, because they prefer to be and hang around and spend time with men. And that, you know, it's like, yeah, you're not gay, you're not. But you do come off as homoromantic, because this is like, you don't value women, you don't value me as your girlfriend enough as a person, because you've been taught and shown and modeled that women are to be used, not to be with.
Well, I'm struggling with this a little bit. I'm struggling with this a little bit, partially because of the fact that it's always for me the part of how much can I intellectualize something more than what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and make something much more than what it truly is it comes down to relationship, right? I mean, we remove all the terms, we remove all the stuff around it. It's about relationships. And unfortunately, going back to your example, if you are if you're married or in a committed relationship, your sex and sensuality has now been, you know, centralized in one way. And so now if you are someone who expresses that outside of those relationships, like, I mean, you're basically cheating. I mean, in the eyes of a lot of women. And, you know, but then the interesting thing is it goes back to that emotional connection, right? So you're, in some ways, you're going to fault me for being emotional enough and being cognizant of my feelings, that sometimes that I know how to express them in a way that goes beyond just the relationship I have with you, right? And this is not just even with guys. You know, there's ways to be emotionally intelligent, emotionally connected with brothers, sisters. You know, like there's no constraint to this. I think that as soon as you hear sex and sensuality, all you think about is the relationship of two people, right? And if it's not the relationship between two people or three, who knows, then it's somebody just out there doing whatever they want to do and having fun, and there's no responsibility to it. Where's the balance, mm-hmm. right?
That's the thing. I'm not going to say that no woman does this, but when I am saying that, again, I am not, I think that we all deserve and need a diverse set of relationships, whether you're monogamous and straight, whether you're gay and poly, whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. for you, you know, I absolutely want straight cishet men to have, again, deep emotional relationships with other men. I think that is important. Mm-hmm. Where as a straight cishet woman, where it becomes really scary is encountering a lot of cishet men who may be eligible, but don't seem to be willing to put forth the same type of energy and commitment and loyalty to me as someone that they are pursuing. What you know, because they're saying they want a relationship with me, a romantic relationship with me, but they're not willing to do the labor that it takes for that to happen. And yet
you said labor.
They're able to do that labor and don't necessarily see it as labor, but it still is labor, where that loyalty, that commitment, that time that they put into their relationship with men, it's just like, the fuck is going on here?
Well,
and so, but it, and again, back to the original point, it's like, the idea of soul ties, and it's like in the way that it was used to against women, because women would, mm-hmm. you know, we're the emotional creatures who don't know how to separate sex and feelings, and men are literally being celebrated, you know, in ways that they can have sex with a woman and have no emotional ties, and not realizing how much of that on both sides is misogyny. Because men are having sex with women that they have no emotional connection to and do not get, are supposedly do not get caught up emotionally. And it's like, maybe it's because they don't see us as people.
I don't know about being seen as people.
But you're all, you're a different kind of dude.
That's what you think. No, I believe that on any given day, a person is going to work with what they have to achieve whatever goal they have, right? Like, I'm going to start there. And the idea of relationships, especially, you know, long-term relationships, committed relationships, whatever that looks like, I don't think it's easily as easily defined sometimes for people as they would like to believe. Because when they're presented with what is typically what they would want, they're not interested. And so then it becomes a question of, well, is it really just because you and that person are just incompatible? You know, are there other factors that we're unaware of? But at the end of the day, going back to what you were saying, I think there are more people who would be happy to admit that they would have wished to explore different types of relationships, not just for the sake of just exploring, but because of the journey that you go through that. Even for myself, like, I feel like in some ways that I didn't get the chance to really explore a lot of different relationships on my terms. It was, you know, it was always more about how can I do good around the people around me, even those I was interested in. So it became more of a role than, oh, I'm meeting this person. Maybe we vibe. Maybe we don't. Maybe we become lifelong friends. Maybe I hate you the next day. Doesn't matter. Things happen. I don't think that has ever been given as a choice. It's either, you know, you stay pure or hide it really well.
And just lie to yourself and think you
are. Yeah, just lie to yourself. It's funny that I think about it, how some of the people that I know that I'm close to, it just never comes up in conversation. Like, it's just one of those things where we're just going to assume that, like, nothing has happened this entire time. And again, everybody has a right to their privacy. Again, I am, if there's one thing anyone who knows me is, I love my privacy. Okay, sometimes a little bit too much, but I love my privacy. But again, at what point do we go beyond ourselves and say, all right, enough is enough, right? Like, because, and just like we were talking about earlier, we don't know how long we have on this earth, right? So when you think about some of the things that people do, it tells you that they usually have an idea that they can get away with this because they have time, right? And ultimately, when you really talk about emotional intelligence, to me, is always funny, because when people say it, it sounds like you just have it, right? But in reality, emotional intelligence is something you're constantly learning, you're constantly maintaining, you're constantly building. A person just isn't intelligence just for the sake of intelligence. Like, there's a whole process behind that that's always happening. And I think that's where we get lost, where if I can show you that I'm emotionally intelligent once, that should hold me over for a long time. Like, you should never ever ask me again if I'm emotionally intelligent. Because we had our moment, right? And you felt good about it. So there we go. I've given you that. But I think the actual work of really being connected to someone takes time, right? And I'm not talking about you meet someone, you connect, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I really want to be around this person. I'm talking about that person's not around you. Time has passed, and you still want to be connected. Right. You don't have these easy things that you can use to kind of drive whatever it is that brought you to that person in the first place. Right. It takes work. Like, I mean, as much as I would like to pretend or like to believe that I'm emotionally intelligent, I have emotionally intelligent mess ups all the time because I'm human. I'm going to make mistakes, and we make mistakes in all parts of our lives. But maybe being emotionally intelligent or emotionally available actually means that I have to believe in the long term. And My body says no, run away.
No, as someone who has a very, very deep spiritual connection with someone and has had this, you know, literally it's almost 18 years. And it's funny because I remember someone telling me, oh, it was a soul tie. Now, because yes, of the way that soul ties were taught to me, I'm like, that you're insinuating that we've had sex and I just can't let him go. except at the time, we had never had sex. We didn't even have a little bit of sex.
Yeah, nothing was happening.
Like, at most, all we had done was kiss.
Yeah.
Literally. And, you know, mm-hmm. and so it was like, you're trying to, and I guess in those moments, it also was like, how we use the concept of soul ties, that phrase is not in the Bible, to diminish someone's feelings. And even like, so if we go into the New Testament, one of the scriptures that is commonly used is 1 Corinthians 6:16 that says, "What? Know ye not that he which is joined to a harlot is one body? For two, saith he, shall be one flesh." And I'm like, okay, that's talking about a man sleeping with a prostitute. And
harlot.
That, right. And then having sex with this prostitute makes them one flesh, which is also something that you hear when they're talking about a man and a woman getting married, that they leave their parents and they cleave mm-hmm. to each other and become mm-hmm. one flesh. But again, that is not talking about a spiritual connection. That is them joining their bodies together. Mm-hmm. And what about that? Does that mean that they cannot then break that agreement, if that's what you want to call it? That's not what that says.
No. It goes back to people.
Go ahead.
It just goes back to people's own interpretations of things. And it's almost like, I'm going to think about something in a certain way. I'm going to throw it on the wall. And if it sticks, and it sticks long enough, we're all going to go for it. That's what I feel like a lot of things are. And as long as nobody challenges what I say, hey, it's law. I'm not going to tell you it's not true, but it benefits me. So why not?
Right. Well, I mean, because again, it's like, so this, on this website called Verse by Verse Ministry, the writer writes that false teachers point to passages like 1 Samuel 18:1, which says David's soul was knit to Jonathan's soul, or 1 Corinthians 6:16, which commands believers not to engage in sexual sin to support their improper interpretation. They claim these passages are examples of knitting souls together, but their claim is not supported by a proper interpretation of the text. Rather, this is a classic case of false teaching, distorting the true meaning of scripture to promulgate strange myths built upon speculation. And then I think about, because of course, like, again, we just talk about sacred sexuality and the power of that and the energy exchange. And so it's like, well, if you believe that you're exchanging energies, then how can you not believe in soul ties? And I'm like, because energy and your literal spirit being tied to someone is that's two different things. That's the cool. exchange of energy doesn't mean that I'm constantly and perpetually connected to them, as what soul ties is insinuating.
I think most people could connect with the idea of an energy, right? You go to a party, you can feel the energy in the room. You go to a funeral, the vibes, right? Whatever you want to call them, you know, but there's this underlying sense that we have that allows us to connect with the way people are feeling in a broader sense. Right. Whether you know, we have to acknowledge it or not, versus soul ties takes it to a whole different level. You know, like it's like walking into the room and then now, because we exchanged energy. Right.
And so we exchange energy. And there's nothing you can do about it, as if you didn't have a choice to then be like, I don't like that. I'm going to let that one go. Mm-hmm. And then I think too, even though it is more commonly used to subjugate women, I think we in our internalized misogyny and in the internalization of this purity culture, even though it is harmful for us, I think we've also used it in a way where it absolves us of our own responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And how we demonstrate a lack of emotional maturity in connection and relationship with people that we're sleeping with, when in reality, what it's like, what it likely demonstrates is that you don't have good boundaries. You do not you don't have good boundaries with yourself or with the people that you're sleeping with. To think that you sleep with someone and that automatically means that you guys are in a relationship, and to understand that that isn't just happening to young women.
Yeah, because we're still talking about this in the context of men and women, right? Which is what people would like you to believe is the case.
Well, because again, most times, I'm not in these conversations as much as someone else who's in that community. So if you are in the LGBTQIA+ community and these conversations are happening, I would love to hear from you. I would love to have you on if you want to talk mm-hmm. about it. But I wonder, like, are lesbians being told that they have soul ties? Are gay men being told that they have soul ties if they can't get over someone because they had sex? Or is this literally something that really is something that only the cishet community, church, religious community is dealing with till this day? Because literally, I just saw a post literally last week people arguing about soul ties and whether or not they're a thing.
Please go on YouTube.
Saying that they don't, and they don't believe in it. And other people saying, oh, whatever, that's not true. It doesn't. And I'm like, we're still here.
Listen, just go on YouTube.
He's still not taking responsibility for the fact that I decided to sleep with him and he didn't want anything from me other than sex. And and for some reason, I have created a scenario in my mind that meant that he liked me more than he actually does, because nothing that he's doing is showing that he likes me. But somehow this one thing has got me so tied to him that it's been 10 plus years and I'm still holding on to hope that he's going to wake up one morning and realize he made the worst mistake of his life and he doesn't move on.
And again, it's not like this doesn't happen in real life, right? Like, I mean, we know people, we've experienced ourselves. Yeah.
I know someone. And at some point, I'm sitting here like, so when do we decide that maybe a mental illness in the sense of a diagnosis, but there's some kind of mental health aspect of this, that literally there are women who, to our own detriment, have believed this idea of soul tie that years have gone by. And you have literally, you've tied yourself to the thought of it. You don't have to be, but it's more of a mental tie than it is a spiritual one.
Oh, yeah.
Because you continue to choose to be tied to the memory of something, to the idea of someone, that you are unable to live in the present reality of a thing.
Yeah, that's a, again, that's on your side. Because like I said, I rarely hear.
Well, because the opposite of that is that is the idea and the stereotype that men are just perpetually detached.
That's a good one.
And so we are overly attached and you guys are completely detached. And yet we, those of us who are straight are supposed to want each other and be married to each other. And again, which is why I said it's not just enough to know what you believe and be like, hey, this is what I believe and this is what I choose to believe. It's so important that I'm 40 years old. If you are 40 and up, if you are younger than 40, then please get a head start. Do it now. But if you've never sat down and really articulated what you believe, and then ask yourself, how is this helping me? How is this harming me? Does this harm other people? Do mm-hmm. I still have to believe this? And if I don't believe this anymore, then what am I replacing that belief with? I'll repeat that. Have you ever articulated mm-hmm. what you believe? If you haven't, then I challenge you. When you finish listening to this episode, I want you to take out a pen and paper, pencil, or take out your phone if it's easier for you to verbalize it and start and open up your recording device and record yourself, either video or just audio, articulating what it is you believe about yourself and your life, your faith, etc. And then ask yourself the following questions. Do I really believe this? Does this belief help me? Is it harmful to me? Is it harmful to others? If it is helpful to me and not harmful to others, wonderful. keep it, hold on to it. If it is harmful to you and or harmful to others, then what belief are you going to put in place of that? And if you need assistance, maybe at that point you figure out, well, who can I go to for assistance? Because I don't know how to make that turn, that I don't think this is a good belief for me. This belief has harmed me, has been harmful to me in my life, but I don't know how to make the turn, how to let that go and replace that belief with something else. If you don't know how to do that in and of yourself, there is no shame in that whatsoever, because there is a lot of years of indoctrination to just decide that you're just going to wake up one day and be like, I don't believe that LGBTQIA is a sin. If you can do that and actually and really believe it, because if you believe, you understand your beliefs drive your thoughts drive your actions. They drive what you say and what you do. So if you can literally just wake up and be like, I don't believe that anymore, and repent from it, which is the turning away of something, which means that you got to replace that belief with another belief. And then you walk in another direction, which means your thoughts, your words and actions now change towards it. Then great. That's wonderful. But if not, if that is not something that you are able to do of your own strength and intelligence, there's nothing wrong with it, because guess what? As we said earlier, you didn't choose to believe that of your own accord either. It was something that was modeled, taught to you, told to you explicitly in some way, shape, or form, probably in multiple ways, that was something that was wrong for you and or for someone else. Because there are people in literally the church that I've been attending and recently joined, the faith community, you go to my page, I do edit it, and it's like the church is the only place that it's okay for people not to grow. And if you really, really think about it, if you don't go to a church like that, wonderful. I'm so happy for you. But a lot of us have gone to churches like that because growth is the enemy of the status quo. And if people, if you don't grow and change and evolve, you're more easily manipulated and controlled. Mm-hmm. And then the moment that you start to grow, and if that growth, if you do grow, it's supposed to be in a way that they agree with. And if it's not, then you are made into an enemy. Ask me how I know. Because if you watch the first episode of this season and the second episode of this season, and I haven't, because I told you I wasn't going to make this season about every little thing that's happened as a result of me, you know, talking about what happened to me in a very general way, because I did not even insinuate the name of the church. You would know that I have been made an enemy of that church, and for some people, church in general. Although I'm not against church in general, I'm not against the Black church in general, I wouldn't even make these comments if I didn't love the church, and specifically the Black church, if I didn't believe that the Black church could be better for people and, you know, for all of us. I wouldn't care. But more than anything, it was offensive to them because I couldn't be manipulated and controlled. And the danger of me not going away silently is that I, little old me, could influence someone else and they would lose that grip on them. Because it's like, oh, well, we've lost her, but let me do everything I can to make sure that my position to be able to control and manipulate the rest of the people that are still here remains strong. And I guarantee you, if you're in a place like that and you start to just do that exercise of articulating your beliefs and really starting to ask the questions of, has this harmed me? Is this harmful to other people? And then to say, oh, I don't have to believe that. So now what am I going to believe? If that means that you're going to a therapist or a coach or a counselor or whatever to work that out, I'm going to give you one last tip before we go. Keep it to yourself for now. Do that work in private, safe places. Mm-hmm. Don't run to publicize this until you are able to really articulate and be confident in what you now believe. That is why, as much as it impacted me, because I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm not going to spiritually bypass and act like I'm so above it. It definitely impacted me to have people that I've known and cared about for 18 years treat me the way they did. But I was safe and protected and very confident in what I did. And it didn't impact my soul and my spirit as much as it would have if I would have tried to do this 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I might have been suicidal. I might have been someone who completely lost her faith, or, you know, there would have been the repercussions of that to do that maybe even 2-3 years ago would have been a lot more dangerous for me, because I would not have been ready to do that then. So if that is somewhere where you are and you're realizing that you need to interrogate your beliefs, whether it's about soul ties or sex or whatever, get someone that you will maintain your privacy, which is one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I encourage therapy, because licensed therapists are bound to privacy, unlike your pastor, who also should be private, but they are not bound legally to privacy and not sharing your business. And there are way too many pastors that I know personally who will use that. And even if they don't say your name, we'll talk about it across the pulpit or share it with other people in the ministry. Get that help and don't be so quick to just broadcast it to the world, especially while you're still working this out for yourself.
Wow.
So that's how we end this episode of Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy. For being here, for listening, for watching, for your comments, your DMs, your likes, all of those things. Before we go, I do want to make sure that I invite my listeners, our listeners and watchers over on YouTube. I am hosting my first, but not my last, inaugural course called Heavenly Body, Healing from Purity Culture, 6 weeks starting on Wednesday, April 5th. You can go to my website. It's in the show notes, www.theradiantsessions.com/links. And you hit the top button and it will take you to the page to sign up for the course. Right now, I'm excited.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah. I'm excited. We're going to have a good time. We're going to definitely learn about how purity culture, you know, harms us, has harmed us. But what I'm even more excited about is helping you all with very practical things over the course of those 6 weeks on how to change your belief around purity culture and how to work that out with actual rituals and practices and exercises and affirmations and this, that, and the other. So you can create an ethic for yourself that doesn't harm you or other people in the way that purity culture has harmed us. So I hope to see you all there and join me and the others on that journey. I can't. And then you'll also have live coaching from me as well during those 6 weeks. So it is an incredible deal, yes, as you all will be founding members of that course. So I can't promise that the next time I do it, it will be the price will be that low or we'll have all those things included in it. So definitely take advantage of that, and I will see you there. And as always, be as radiant as the sun.
Bye. Thank you.